Stories, fables, ghostly tales. Can you make a bet with death and win? That, my lovely listeners, is exactly what we'll be listening to today. Brought to your much-deserving ears is an episode from the Suspense series of the Old Time Radio. And this particular episode was a joy to clean up. This particular one had some clicks, some pops, but a lot of strange silences in the audio. But I found them and reduced them down to a little blip. I'm like a noise detector now. And I've been able to find Suspense OTR's common detectable faults. To summarize, this might be the most polished Suspense OTR episode I've ever done. But you let me know. Before we jump in, for all those wondering about last Friday and missing an episode, well, my computer blew up, and the CPU fan shattered due to old age and getting caught on a metal heatsink. Either way, I just installed a sexy new liquid cooler. And I have some super duper quiet fans coming in, so I'll be able to record in complete silence. So yeah, all is good now. Speaking of good things, are my amazing Ode Night Tea Titans. Matthew J. Bauer, Bone Dice. There is a tale of a man who owned two dice tarnished brown and white, who would travel from town to town wagering a bet that few would take. Those that would take the risk would put their lives on a course of paranoia, deceit, and unscrupulous survival. The power the dice held were never known, only speculated. And it was in rolling these dice that the men or women or children, foolish enough to gamble, would stake their lives on. The dice would roll, and the two die that appear, added together, represented the months they had left to avoid death. Avoid it and you'll earn a pair of die yourself, and much more. But no one knows what much more really is, because no one's ever come back from that bet. So, would you roll the dice? Maya, Ace of Blades. A gambler, a drifter, and all-around nifty thrifter, the Ace of Spades is a character that at times seems bigger than life. And despite her gracious reputation, she is impossible to pin down. At first, they hear her name and wonder what the hubbub is, thinking to themselves, as all laypeople do, that this mere moniker only alludes to a name without substance, without merit. How wrong they are, as people who are wont to think this way often are. An assassin with a smile, Ace of Blades takes your bets and holds you to it. And should you fail to pass her challenge, then she'll hold you to your failure in a more physical manner. Three golden blades are her calling card, and each bet is unique to the individual. If you meet her, would you take that risk? Solstra, Thumbtack. There is nothing worse than making a bet with someone who just never gives up. I mean, never stops hounding you for the littlest of bets. But you see, there is someone in this world who hates the limelight, hates the big deals, the insane commission with the insane risky business. Welcome, of course, the Thumbtack. Small in stature, but great in speed, Thumbtack specializes in chasing up on deals that are smaller than most, and is even known to enforce principles of a bet for a small fee. Thumbtack, as her name suggests, operates in one exclusive way. Once pressed, i.e. paid, to do your contract, she has an embedded-like grip on your whereabouts, going-ons, and your sanity. No bet is too small. How would you handle the Thumbtack? Thank all of you, you amazing people, for your awesome support. I mix in today the theme of this episode, death, failure, and a person's principles. I hope you loved them. Cheers, mates. My White Tea Warlords. I Own Cows, Jailbreaker. When inmates are brought into the Freytail Country Jail, they feel like there's no hope. They don't know what awaits them on the other end, their freedom or the electric chair. But the Jailbreaker, previously a farmer who herded cattle in his past life, like them, gambles with his life through the use of explosives and misdirection, posing as guards, brothers, fathers, uncles, you name it. The Jailbreaker has done it all. Espionage and planting seeds of freedom, or as he calls it, dynamite, in key areas during his scouting of jails. Rest assured, when freedom calls, the Jailbreaker is picking up that phone. Lee Bauer, Slip Disc. There are few people that know Slip Disc, and even fewer that understand his talents. Slip Disc is the man you call upon when you need cards shuffled in a way that, even at point-blank range, you can't detect the sleight of hand. Well known for showing you a king in one hand and a queen in the same hand seconds later, you'd swear that sort of card trickery is impossible. You grasp his wrist, futilely wondering where he hides that second card, and all you have to show for it is a one-way ticket out of the casino. Slip Disc to the underground world is a silent assassin of rigged games, and his talent will have you bleeding money throughout the night. Thank you both for being awesome and supporting the show, mate. Today I wanted to make yours a little more adventurous and out there. I hope you enjoyed them. And of course, my Earl Grey enforcers, Chad Warren, Joss Heather, Lorraine Crisanto, Paige Marcini, Peter Raffelli, Tasha Moncrief, Christina Boyd, and Divided by Zero. Thank all of you for your support. Every single episode and donation gets me that bit closer to doing some awesome work. And you're all part of that, so thank you. Now turn off the lights, get cozy, and let's listen to someone rolling the dice with death.
Nighttime, the hushed voice and the prowling step, the stir of nerves at the ticking of the clock, the rescue that might be too late, the crime that is almost committed, mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventures. We invite you to enjoy stories that keep you in suspense. Can a man stake his life against $25,000? Can another and cleverer man track him down like a hunter, stalking his prey and kill him within 5 hours? Can you make a bet with death and win?
For Suspense, tonight we present Will You Make a Bet with Death by John Dixon Carr.
On a summer day, there's the beach, bright colored with bathing suits. There's the boardwalk, all straw hats and summer dressing. There's the Ferris wheel and the roller coasters. There is all humanity eating hot dogs and having a good time. And over there, beyond that souvenir shop, is a haunted mill. You get into a little boat. You float through a narrow tunnel into the dark while witches scream. But that fools nobody, does it? There couldn't be any real terror, could there? While the bands are playing and the crowd goes by and...
Ladies and gentlemen, a unique attraction. It hurts me to see you stand there and miss this. Only 10 cents, one dime, the tenth part of a dollar to go through the old haunted mill and get the thrill of your life.
An overstatement, if you ask me. One ticket, please.
Did you say one ticket, lady?
That's right, one ticket. What's the thrill?
Beg pardon, lady?
I said, what's the thrill?
Lady, the gals who come here with their boyfriends don't have to ask that. 10 cents, please, this way and mind the gate.
Thank you.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Get your ticket for the old haunted mill where ghosts will walk and corpses...
Give me some tickets. Hurry.
Just a minute, young fella. I know you want to get into the old haunted mill, but there's plenty of time. How many tickets?
I don't know. You better give me 10.
10 tickets? Do you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Here's a young fella who likes the old haunted mill so much, he buys 10 tickets.
Don't call everybody's attention. Listen, I've got a better idea. whatever boat comes after mine...
Yeah?
I'll give you an extra dollar to send that boat through empty.
Now, what's the matter, son? The cops ain't after you, are they?
No. It's nothing like that. Will you do it?
Well, money talks, young fellow. Okay, go ahead.
Isn't there an empty boat here?
Well, really? You've got such a great objection to riding in the same boat with me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that at all. Don't misunderstand.
Then you better get in if you want to go. This boat's starting to move.
Yeah, I better sit down.
You certainly had.
Look here, I want to apologize.
That's quite unnecessary. This place is rather childish anyway, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it?
But I've seen everything else, so I may as well see this. Here we go in the dark.
What was that?
One of the ghosts, I imagine, from a machine.
It sounded like him laughing. There isn't anybody in the boat behind us, is there?
Oh, I can't see. It's pitch dark.
Listen, Miss...
My name is Andrews, Betty Andrews. If it's customary to exchange names in a place like this...
Mine's Pendrell. Bob Pendrell.
Did you say Pendrell?
Yes. Do you know it?
Oh, no, not exactly. It's an unusual name, that's all.
I don't want you to think I'm out of my mind, though I very nearly am. But I've got 5 hours to go. Just 5 hours. At the end of that time, either I'll have won $25,000 or else...
Or else?
Or else I'll be dead.
You know, I wish I'd kept you away from this boat.
Now, there's nothing to get alarmed about. For you. I can't tell you much, but I had to tell somebody that or I'd have started yelling. There's just one other thing.
Is there?
In these places, they've usually got little dim-lighted rooms along the way.
Yes,
exhibits
and things.
Yes. Well, when we come to one, I'm going to get out of this boat and hide there. Just don't get alarmed, and don't tell anybody when you go out.
Why should you do that?
I think I see a light ahead.
Well, there is a light, but...
Dim, too. That's all for the good. Yes? We're coming around the corner. Look, I'm going to have company when I get off. A waxed dead man on a pile of straw. Oh, I hope I can stand these noises. Goodbye, Betty Andrews. I wish we'd met at a different time.
Mind the boat!
Here, what are you doing?
Getting out, too.
Don't be an idiot. What's the idea?
You need looking after, Mr. Pendrell. And if we must hide, I suppose this is as good a place as any.
I won't have it.
Quick, there'll be more boats along. Over behind that dead man on the straw. He'll hide us. Hurry. Now, Mr. Pendrell, in the queerest place I ever get into, please tell me what this is all about.
I can't tell you.
You said it yourself. If you don't tell somebody, you'll go crazy.
Maybe you're right. It's against the strict terms of the bet. But this is the last day. And I tell you, I can't hold out any longer.
Lower your voice as the boat comes.
I wonder if you ever heard of my stepfather, John Destry.
Yes?
I imagine everybody has. He's a millionaire, and I'm not. I'm just a chemist, an analytical chemist. Not very successful. Well, if I'd had time, if I'd had money, I might have worked out a process that would have... Well, I think it would have helped in the war.
But he's got money.
Yes, he's got money. Well, my mother died years ago. This Destry's a big, white-haired, fine-looking fella. You'd think butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He's got an apartment in the East 60s. Secretary, I never met her. Valet, cook, that kind of thing. Well, he used to invite me there. I wouldn't go. Then he got hold of a book I had to have. A German work on chemicals. So I went. After dinner in that study of his, over the brandy.
Oh, my dear Robert. You're quite welcome to the book. Don't mention it. Oh, what do you think of this brandy, by the way?
It's excellent, thanks.
Yes, I thought you'd like it. And now that we're all relaxed, comfortable after dinner, tell me something.
Yes, Mr. Destry?
You hate me, don't you?
Frankly, I do. And always have.
Good. Then you'll be relieved to hear I've always felt the same about you. But tell me something else. Did you ever know me to break my word?
No, I never did. I'll give you that.
I asked you, Robert, because I want to make a little bet with you. That is, if you have the nerve, which I doubt.
I'm afraid I can't afford to make bets.
You were always careless with money, Robert. Well, I've been thrifty. I saw that when your mother was alive. But you can afford to make this bet. Look here, in my desk.
Well?
$25,000, Robert. $25,000 in five $100 bills.
And what would I have to bet against that?
Your life.
What? My life?
There's the money in the drawer. Look at it. What wouldn't you give for that money? What wouldn't you give to have it for this precious work of yours that you're so fond of and that you've failed in miserably?
So far I've failed, yes.
Oh, I've had a fairly good life as lives go. My heart isn't as good as it might be, but the doctors say I'll last a little while yet. But before I go, there's one pleasure, one little exquisite thrill for me to experience. I want to commit a murder. Yes, I said a murder. My bet is that I can kill you within 6 months, and that you can't stop me, and that I'll never be punished for it. What do you say? Yes or no?
I believe you mean that.
Of course I mean it.
And just how would you propose to kill me?
Ah, that would be telling.
You know, if I had time to think this thing over...
There's no thinking it over. Now, yes or no?
Yes.
You must need the money badly, Robert.
I do need it. But oddly enough, Mr. Destry, that isn't why I'm doing this.
No?
No. I want to show you can't play the Lord Almighty and get away with it.
Are you challenging me?
Yes.
You don't think I can do it?
I know you can't.
We mustn't get excited, Robert. There will be conditions to the bet, you understand?
What conditions?
First of all, you'll never mention this matter to anyone.
All right. That seems fair enough.
You'll remain within the city limits of New York for 6 months. You'll spend at least 1 hour of every day walking the open streets alone.
All right.
You'll spend at least 1 hour every evening in your own room alone. I may come to see you, or I may not.
Trying to scare me already, are you?
Finally, you'll write out a little note and give it to me. There's pen and paper on the desk in front of you. Write it now.
Let's hear what I have to write before I do anything like that.
You will write, I am a failure.
You can't stop harping on that, can you?
I am a failure, and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
A suicide note?
Yes. I intend to use it when I operate.
And if I won't write it?
Then there's no bet.
All right, I'll do it.
It's now, let's see, 9 o'clock on the night of January the 10th. If you're alive and not in a madhouse...
Does that go into the bargain, too?
Yes. At 9 o'clock on the night of June 10th, given those conditions, you will receive $25,000. Can't you hear the dice rattle, Robert? You're playing with death now.
I know it.
Aren't you going to finish your brandy?
No, thank you.
Oh, then pour it back into the decanter. You heard me. Pour it back into the decanter. If you were as careful as I am, you wouldn't be where you are now. That's right. Always be thrifty. I can promise you, by the way, that you'll always be perfectly safe as long as you're in this apartment. But that's the only concession I make. Oh, I notice your hands are steady at the moment. I wonder what they'll be like a month from now.
So you were fool enough to make a bet with John Destry.
Listen, Betty. I want to tell you what else happened the same night. I got on the Fifth Avenue bus and started to look through that book that Destry gave me. It was a book that I wanted about poisons. Well, just as I opened it, I felt something sharp prick my fingers. I looked down, and my hands were covered with blood. He had sewn safety razor blades in a line down the inside edge of the cover.
Oh, no!
A little white card fell out of the book, and I read it. It said, "See how easy it is to take you off guard? Those razor blades aren't poisoned, but they might have been. Take warning." Betty, that was 6 months ago. 6 months less 5 hours of careful, refined torture. And now, I've got only 5 hours to go.
What's he done in the meantime?
Nothing.
Nothing? I don't understand.
Nothing at all. That's the cleverness of it. He's left me waiting, waiting, waiting.
Expecting something.
Expecting it every hour of the day or night. Once at the laboratory where I work, I opened a box that I thought was from a chemical supply house. And a Mexican tarantula, one of those furry spiders about as big as your fist, ran out across my hand. It was a toy tarantula. He enclosed a card, asking whether I didn't admire it.
Bob, this can't go on.
I used to think I didn't have a nerve in my body. I could hold a test tube at arm's length, absolutely steady, for minutes at a time. Now look at me.
Don't, please, don't.
But the waiting's almost over now. Walking the streets, wondering who's behind you. Sitting alone at night, listening for every step on the stair. He's got very little time left now, and he's got to do something. The question is, what's he going to do?
Well, maybe he doesn't mean it. Maybe he's only doing it to scare you.
And lose all that money? Oh, you don't know my stepfather.
Listen.
Huh? I don't hear anything.
That's just it. There's no sound of running water. The boats have stopped.
Then we're all by ourselves in here. Or with him.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, how I wish I hadn't gotten you into this.
Oh, I'm all right. Or at least I think I am.
I thought I saw him in the crowd outside, but I couldn't be sure. I'm seeing him everywhere.
Now, Bob, just a minute. Just tell me one more thing. Did you ever see Mr. Destry, I mean face to face, after that first night?
Oh, many times.
He came to see you?
He came to my laboratory once, yes, but mostly I went to see him. And why? Because it was the only place in the world I could feel safe.
He's promised that nothing should happen to you while you were in his apartment.
Don't you see it was part of the torture? Night after night he'd invite me, and I'd go right up until last night. Last night, we were in that study of his, with the devil masks on the walls. And he was sitting behind the big mahogany desk.
My dear Robert, I'm pleased and even touched to have you here on the last night before you,
Why don't you say die and get it over with?
Oh, well, let's not say die.
No?
The clergy contend that we never die. We only change.
Don't.
Now, let that be a consolation for you. Must you be going so early?
There's that 1 hour at home rule to our bet, you remember?
I remember. You're keeping to the rule.
Yes, and I mean to beat you at this if it's the last thing I ever do.
The last thing I ever do? That's an unfortunate choice of phrase, Robert. My boy, you haven't a chance. Something's going to happen to you within the next 24 hours when you least expect it.
Will you answer me one question?
If I choose.
Have you decided how you mean to kill me?
I decided that 6 months ago.
And you still think you can get away with it?
It's a method which has never been known to fail. I give you my word of honor on that.
Is it sudden?
Yes, and no. Wouldn't you like to know what it is?
Good night, Mr. Destry. I think I'd better be leaving.
No, my dear boy, you mustn't go yet. Sit down. Pour yourself a glass of brandy.
No, thanks.
Then perhaps you wouldn't mind pouring me a little. My doctor allows brandy, though I'm forbidden spirits. I notice your hands are shaking quite a good deal. They weren't like that 6 months ago, were they? No. You were full of confidence then.
Oh.
And it grieves me to see you waste tobacco by lighting a cigarette and putting it out immediately.
Well, it's no use lying to you. But I'm going to beat you just the same.
You wouldn't like to back out now?
After what I've been through?
You'd still have your life.
I'll keep it, thanks.
That's very unwise of you, Robert. Still, you must decide. Oh, I was expecting my secretary a little later to dictate some letters. But now, I think I'll leave her a message that I've gone to bed and turn in myself. Tomorrow is likely to prove an interesting day for both of us. Here's your hat. Here's your briefcase, and let me wish you a fond, peaceful and happy. Good night.
That was last night, Betty. I saw I had 5 hours to go.
It's less than 4 hours now.
If I can keep away from the old devil until 9 o'clock.
I wish those boats would start running again.
Why?
Because it's almost as spooky in here as a real old mill.
I know.
Even that whack dummy on the straw. Any minute now.
You're expecting to see him move? So am I.
Now, don't stand up.
It doesn't matter. If the boats aren't running, we can hear anybody who comes along.
I hope so.
Do you think Destry's got in?
Bobby can't have got in. He can't even be here.
Why not?
Because Mr. Destry told me.
Mr. Destry told you?
I'm his secretary.
You know, Betty Andrews, I'm sorry it was you who did this.
Did what?
You can't guess, can you?
Oh, Bob, I didn't come here to trap you or spy on you. If that's what you're thinking, I swear I didn't.
No, you only got me to tell you the whole story and lose my bet.
I haven't heard a single word you said. Bob, please believe that.
He didn't send you here, of course.
No, no.
And of course you never saw me at his apartment last
night. No, I swear I didn't. I got there late. He'd gone to bed. I didn't even take off my hat or gloves before I left again. Don't you understand, Bob? I hate him, too. I want to see you beat him. You've got to beat him.
You mean that?
Look at me and see if I mean it.
Betty, I almost believe you.
You must believe me. And?
Anything else?
We better hide behind that dead man, hurry. Those boats have started up again.
I wish I could tell you, Betty, what that means to me.
Come on, hurry.
Wait a minute, you two.
But
stay just where you are.
Where's that voice coming from?
Along the tunnel, I think.
But it's not Destry's voice.
No, it's a man standing up in a boat. He's coming around the corner. I see him now. Hurry.
The old haunted mill, eh? My golly, if this ain't some place to make a pinch, I never heard of one.
What do you mean, make a pinch?
Just what I said. Your name, Robert Penrill?
Yes. Who are you and what do you want?
Police headquarters. You're to come along with me. I want to see you over in New York.
About what?
I wouldn't know, Eddie, but it might be about the murder of John Destry.
Oh, no!
Did you say the murder of John Destry?
That's right. Somebody poisoned him last night with mercury cyanide. I wouldn't have got you at all, maybe, if the barker outside there hadn't thought the cops were after you to start with.
Betty.
Yes, Bob?
He's beaten me.
He hasn't beaten you.
Oh, yes, he has. And I know now the weapon Destry was going to use in killing me.
What weapon?
It never fails. The electric chair.
You mustn't talk like that.
Don't you see? He never once intended to kill me in the way I thought.
Are you coming quietly, Mr. Pendle?
Just a minute.
He's poisoned himself. But he's left evidence to show I did it. He's killing me the worst way possible. He's won the bet. The money doesn't matter now. If I'm in the death house for murder, what use have I got for all the money in the world?
Mr. Pendrell, let me introduce myself. My name's Mullen, Inspector Mullen.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Inspector. It's a pleasure to be safe again.
I've had you brought here to my office for a little quiet talk. You're in a jam, son. I want you to realize how bad it is.
You think I don't realize it?
John Destry was poisoned with mercury cyanide administered in a glass of brandy.
And only my fingerprints were on the glass besides his own. I can guess.
Mr. Destry's body was found this morning lying behind the desk in the study. There was an empty glass with traces of brandy and cyanide. We haven't had the full autopsy report, but the smell of that stuff is pretty distinctive. Tell me, you're a chemist, Mr. Pendrell.
That's right.
The boys find that 8 grains of mercury cyanide are missing from your laboratory.
Where he visited me a month ago.
And in your briefcase, which you took away from his apartment last night.
He handed it to me. I remember.
We found over $1,000 in cash. Now, take a look at this note. You ever see it before?
Well, yes. I wrote it.
You admit that?
Yes, yes, yes.
It says, I was a failure and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
Where did you find it?
Torn up in little bits. You started to write a confession and then you couldn't face the consequences. But you shouldn't have left the pieces behind. You're intimate, my boy. Unless...
Unless what?
Now, if you'd like to confess here and now, and maybe we did a little deal about second-degree murder,
Inspector, why bother to string me along?
What do you mean, string you along?
There's no second-degree murder on a poison charge. It's the death house and nothing. He saw to that.
Too bad you had to go and kill him, son. Didn't you know he had an aneurysm?
A what?
Fatal heart disease.
He said that he had heart trouble, but...
Heart trouble? His doctor says he couldn't have lived 8 or 10 months anyway. And you might have got something in the will.
So that's why he did it.
Did what?
Killed himself.
You still stick to that crazy story you told the boy?
He's going
to
kill me, isn't he? With 3,000 volts of electricity.
Inspector Mullen.
What are you doing here, Sergeant? Didn't I say I wasn't to be disturbed?
All the same, Inspector. I thought I'd better do it. There's a young lady here, a Miss Betty Andrews. I think you'd better see her.
I'll see her when I'm good and ready.
And I think you'd better see her, Inspector. We've just heard from Mr. Destry's lawyer.
Well?
He said that that young fellow there, Mr. Pendrell, inherits $25,000 in Mr. Destry's new will.
Did you hear that, son? Do you see what you'd have gotten if you hadn't gone and killed him?
He was keeping his promise, that's all. A fine lot of good it'll do me now.
But look, Inspector, I've just talked to the medical examiner, and he says there's no poison in Mr. Destry's body.
Say that again?
There's no poison in the old man's body.
Somebody's kidding you. An empty glass with the smell of mercury cyanide and a dead man with a congested face behind the mask? What did kill him then?
Well, if you'd like to listen to Miss Andrews, Inspector, she's right here now.
I think you'd better listen, Inspector. I've been trying to tell you all afternoon.
Go ahead, Miss Andrews.
I've been over and over it. And until they got the medical report, nobody would listen.
Can you tell us what killed John Destry?
Yes, poison killed him.
But the sergeant's just been saying there was no poison in the body.
Inspector, will you listen? I was at Mr. Destry's apartment late last night.
Well, so what? You didn't kill him, did you?
The servant said he'd gone to bed. So I looked into the study to see if there were any instructions.
Was Mr. Destry dead then?
I don't know. I couldn't see his body because it was hidden behind the desk. I didn't even learn he was dead until late this afternoon. But I did see a full glass of brandy.
A full glass, did you say?
Yes. So I picked up the glass and poured the brandy back into the decanter. That's what he always made us do. And I didn't leave any fingerprints because I was still wearing my gloves. And that was the same glass you later found empty.
But you still are not telling us what was the poison that killed John Destry.
It was the poison in his own system. He worked out this plot to convict Bob Pendrell. Only just as he stretched out his hand to drink the cyanide...
Inspector, I think I see it. It was his last great hour. He couldn't resist such gloating as he'd never known before.
That's it. His heart wouldn't stand it. And he fell dead behind the desk. And I think if you study the expression on his face, you'll find he died laughing.
And so ends Will You Make a Bet with Death, tonight's story of suspense. The part of Bob Pendrell was played by Michael Fitzmaurice. Betty was played by Leslie Woods. John Destry was played by Nicholas Joy. And in supporting roles were Ted DeCorsia and Charles Slattery. Again next Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime, a story dedicated to the thrill of the nighttime, the hushed voice, and the prowling step. Another adventure in suspense. William Spear, the producer, Mark Sloab, the director, in the absence of John Deetz, and John Dixon Carr, the author, are collaborators on Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Wowza, what an awesome suspense episode. I must say, I have a soft spot for suspense OTRs. They generally have fantastic writing, realistic characters, and above all, marvelous acting. The catch, of course, is that the audio is usually really challenging to repair, but when it's cleaned up, it's like sinking your teeth into a prime rib steak. Unforgettable, mates. I hope you enjoyed listening to this OTR. If you get a chance, send it to someone you know, they might love it. And lastly, if you have any spare time at all, swing on by my Patreon page and show the podcast some love. All of your support goes into the show and not my personal spending account. And of course, a big thank you to those that already support the show. Also, whilst I'm thanking my lovely listeners, a big thank you to all of you that reached out to me via email regarding my well-being. That was really touching. And my exploding computer. To all of you lovelies, I'll be responding to you Tuesday, as I'll have some time allotted on my day off to do just that. Take it easy, you brilliant people, and as always, till next we meet.